Absolutely. That's bang on. So you have the risk return dimension, and you have an environmental and or social impact dimension, right? So I want to avoid a certain amount of CO2 equivalents be released into the air. I want to get a certain amount of children into school.
Welcome to the Future Ready Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Sivarajan, wealth management consultant and behavioral scientist. Join me and my guests, from industry experts to top advisors, as we explore the pain points that financial advisors face, how they can solve them, free up their time, and make their practice future ready. Hi, everyone. I'm Sam Sivarajan. Welcome to today's episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Today, I'm here with Angela Wiebeck, an experienced investment and sustainability expert who's worked with investors, retail and institutional, as well as governmental organizations on the theme of sustainable investing. Angela, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Sam.
Delighted to have you on the show, Angela. Let me introduce you quickly to the audience. Angela is the Chief Sustainability Officer at Aquila Capital, and she is based in Zurich, Switzerland. Aquila manages over 15 billion euros in clean energy and sustainable infrastructure and contributes to the global energy transition and strengthens the world's infrastructure backbone. Previously, Angela was head of sustainability and impact investing for UBS. Angela, welcome again to the show. Can we start with us? With you telling us a little bit about your business, your journey, and your philosophy when it comes to impact investing?
Sure. All right. So let me start with Aquila Group. So thanks so much for the kind introduction, Sam. At Aquila Group, together, we form a group of businesses, as you mentioned, that are focused on the development, construction, and operation of essential assets on behalf of institutional clients. And we have clean energy businesses in Europe. We have clean energy businesses in APAC. We have a business that's focused on the decarbonization of infrastructure assets, such as logistics, operations, and data centers. And we have Aquila Capital Investment Gesellschaft, which is our regulated alternative investment fund manager under BaFin, which is the German regulatory financial authority. And some interesting data points about Aquila, just to add to what you had mentioned, Sam, is that at the end of 2022, we had an installed and developed capacity of 13.9 gigawatts. And a track record of developed and installed capacity of 19 gigawatts, which together means that we supply over 2 million households with clean energy. And when you translate that into specifics, it translates into 235 solar PV parks, 768 wind turbines, and 276 hydropower plants. We have about 688 employees sitting in different parts of Europe and Asia. So you ask about, I guess, my journey. So I spent, as you mentioned, over 17 years at UBS in a variety of different roles. I started in a client-facing capacity. Actually, you, Sam Sivarajan, you were my boss and my mentor for quite a bit of that journey in wealth management. And I started to focus my sustainability journey when I became the head of impact investing in 2017. And this was really something that happened after I watched the MDGs become the SDGs in 2015. And I started to see in the marketplace bigger impact investment offerings starting to bear fruit. So at UBS, what we did at the time is we launched the UBS Oncology Fund. This was a partnership we created with a venture manager, MPM Capital, and we were able to, at that time, raise a record-breaking $471 million to support faster development of drugs for cancer care and cancer treatment. And part of the fund also gave its profits to research and healthcare in the emerging markets. And by 2019, had already donated almost $3 million to the UBS Optimus Foundation and the American Cancer Association for Cancer Research. That's in about a 50-50 split. And those funds then went to cancer care in the emerging world, as well as research through the American Association for Cancer. And so this was what piqued my interest in impact investing. I got involved in 2016 at UBS. I helped define the sustainable investing strategy there. As the head of impact investing and through the definition of the nomenclature at that time. And at the end of 2017, I moved from that role into a group role at of leading sustainability at UBS. And in this role, I then worked with our group executive board and our board to help formulate our sustainability strategy across the group. I also led the implementation of the strategy using ISO 14001 and leading teams of around 150 people across the bank. And I was able in this role to steer different group-wide projects such as Net Zero, Principles for Responsible Banking, etc. And these were all very helpful activities to the work that I do today at Aquila Group as the Chief Sustainability Officer. Just to talk about that briefly, when I look at my role at Aquila Group and I look at what is my job as a CSO, this really translates into leadership in many areas. So it's really leading all of our sustainability activities, but it can be simplified into three, I guess, focus points. The first one is really looking at how we manage ESG throughout the life cycle of our investments. So this includes leading the people, the processes, the policies, and the tools that we use to identify, avoid, and mitigate environmental and social impacts of our projects. So that's one big area of purview for me and for my team. The second area is, of course, the direction of travel. Just this year, we announced our mission. So we want to be a leading player in the development and investment of essential assets by 2030. And the third area is a little bit less exotic and exciting, but that's really about transparency. That's about reporting. So I'm leading the efforts to keep score on how we are achieving or the progress that we're making in achieving our mission and our goals. That's at the group and at the company-wide level.
So metrics that may be not, as you say, as exotic, but it's important because what you measure, as you know, gets done. You talked a bit about sustainability and impact investing, and I know that they've certainly been making the headlines. Mm-hmm. I remember when we used to talk about SRI, socially responsible investing, and ESG, environmental, social, governance criteria for investing. Can you help the audience understand the difference or the definition of impact investing and how perhaps it differs from SRI and ESG?
Absolutely. So impact investments are investments with an explicit intention to generate a positive social or environmental impact alongside the explicit intention to achieve a specific financial goal within a certain risk parameter. That's the broad definition of impact. And sustainable investing, or SRI, as you call it, socially responsible investing, this is more the broad umbrella category for all investment approaches that consider environmental, social, and or governance factors in decision making. And so sustainable investing and SRI, this umbrella term, has a variety of, call it, underlying strategies. Impact investing is one of them, and I just defined it, but there's also a few others. There's another category just called ESG integration, or this is just where there could be a label called ESG. And ultimately, this is probably one of the broadest categories out there today. And all it means is that portfolio managers consider environmental and social governance factors in their asset valuations and their portfolio construction decisions. So They consider what environmental, social, and or governance elements of a company's operations might influence the valuation of that asset or that company. So that's ESG integration. And so impact is really a niche, I would say, very focused definition for a investment that really intentionally seeks to generate a positive social or environmental impact. And so let me just pause and say there are, I think, a few key differentiators for impact. One, it needs to be intentional. So it's explicitly stated in all pre-contractual documents, and there needs to be a goal linked to it, and the goal needs to be measured. So prospectuses need to define the environmental and or social goals within them, and that needs to be stated in a prospectus how that goal will be measured. The second thing that needs to happen in terms of for an impact investment to be actually an impact investment is it needs to be managed. And here, there's a lot of work that's happened in the industry about how we can measure and manage impact.
So, Angela, if I take a dumbed down interpretation of impact investing, and correct me if I'm wrong. So obviously, as investors, you're looking at the return on your portfolio and the investments. As an impact investor, you have a second metric on the social side of things. Is that a fair, Sam's dumbed down definition of impact investing for the average investor?
Absolutely. That's bang on. So you have the risk return dimension and you have an environmental and or social impact dimension, right? So I want to avoid a certain amount of CO2 equivalents be released into the air. I want to get a certain amount of children into school. I want to increase the efficacy of a certain healthcare program. That's exactly what it is. I think the devil does, again, get into the detail and how one measures this. So I think here there has been quite a lot of work done across the industry to create some simple tools that allow investors and fund managers to measure and then manage the impact goals that they set out. And the aim here is not only to measure your impact on an annual basis, but it's also to use the information that you get from that measurement to optimize your impact going forward. That is the expectation, as you would when you make decisions as a investment manager to optimize your investments for a better return given a specific risk profile.
And so if I can expand on that a little bit, so you've got two metrics, which I think both make sense. Is there ever a scenario where there's a trade-off involved between those two metrics? And how does a manager make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, this is the difficult holy grail, I think, for any investment manager or fund manager in this space. I think that ultimately you are always considering both risk return and impact in the same decision. But I think ultimately what managers tend to do is then they tend to keep in light the bigger picture. And this is why, again, the measurement and management frameworks and a lot of really advanced players have proprietary measurement methods that they can use so they can really have real-time data to understand what are the implications of their investment decisions. But ultimately, it's a portfolio of holdings. It's a portfolio of assets. Mm-hmm. And I think then as an investment manager and a decision maker, one's always going to consider the trade-offs between the two, but managing hopefully for the whole portfolio, meaning you can optimize also at the same time both.
That makes total sense. I mean, obviously, you're coming from Switzerland, and we've seen around the world extreme weather events that have been taking place over the last few years. So are you seeing a different reaction from investors on this topic of impact investing or making a difference from a climate perspective, having those other metrics?
So let me just take a step back before I answer your question and just to mention that there are definitely different motivation factors, even in the institutional space, between different geographies or continents, and even within countries. And to make that more concrete, you know, a big part of our institutional client base is sitting here in Germany, with where we have clients that have very deep and lengthy experience with alternative investments, but specifically in real estate and infrastructure investments. And these asset classes are often selected because of their portfolio diversification, risk return ratio, and inflation protection benefits. And so those are the primary drivers for those clients still to today. As they're selecting their fund managers in the RFP process, they very much care about the ESG capabilities and credentials of the fund manager, and that will be very much part of the due diligence process. But for them, it's still about diversification, risk return, inflation protection. Those are the primary drivers. Now, if we look at the international institutional client base, and specifically if we hone into some of the Nordic countries and even going into APAC, if you look into Japan, there we see institutional clients that are considering not only the ESG competence of the fund manager, but they're very much looking at the climate mitigation properties of the investment offering. So here, obviously, tailwinds for this is, GFANZ, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. We all know that there's over 130 trillion assets under management out there with the commitment to bring the portfolios down to a net zero emission by 2050. So these players all need to add low carbon intensive investment allocations to their portfolios. So that's a rather long-winded answer to say that institutional investors are choosing infrastructure allocation or specifically clean energy and decarbonization assets for risk return reasons and for broader commitments to net zero. But the seasonal climate, related events, I don't see those as big drivers, though. As I say it, I can imagine that extreme weather events that we've been seeing this year, last year, and with increased temperature, I think we're reaching peaks every month and have been now for the past few months. I think this is a nice tailwind for investment decisions, financing decisions that are involving decarbonization and energy transition assets.
I think you make an interesting point about risk return. And maybe I'm going out on a limb here. At least I've seen some policy papers, et cetera, from global players that maybe that in our definition of risk from a portfolio point of view, that we need to think about the climate risk or carbonization risk. And one example I can see is that like places in the West Coast of the U.S., for example, insurance companies are no longer willing to underwrite insurance. So they're taking in the climate risk or into their risk reward, or into the traditional risk reward metric. It's an observation, and I see your point that it's not cut and dried, and every investor, every organization is going to take a slightly different take on what their key objectives are, what the priorities of those objectives are. But is that a fair assessment, that perhaps increasingly we might see investors take a more holistic or broader definition of risk into consideration when they're making these risk return trade-offs?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the insurance industry is at the forefront of evaluating climate-related risks in their portfolios and, as you say, in their underwriting activities. And I think risk is still the big driver of this topic in investment decisions. And we see it, you know, climate-related events, and we talk about weather, but we also see it with reputational risk, right? I mean, look at, you know, greenwashing. You know, you look at DWS and the famous case against them, and once you all of a sudden have a reputational challenge facing your company, what is that doing to the underlying value of your company? And so this lens of what kind of risk is out there in terms of, you know, whether it's climate or whether it's how you're treating your workforce or whether it's the processes that you have and how credible they are, the governance structure that you have, right, and your remuneration policies, attention to equality and in how you treat your workforce and your suppliers. These are all really important topics that influence the underlying value or have the potential to influence either positively or negatively the underlying financial value of your asset, whether it's your company or a specific holding that you have in a wind farm or in a solar PV park. So it's absolutely the driving topic. It's having a bigger and bigger role. It's hard to quantify still. I think insurance companies really have very advanced methodologies to do that. And I know there are quite a lot of data providers trying to provide risk analytics out there. I think the understanding the impact of certain climate-related events, whether it's water rising or wind, you know, or increased irradiation, what that does to the underlying asset under hand and at what point it reaches distress, those are areas that are still being developed. And I think in our industry, that's a big topic that we need to work on developing further.
That's great. We'll have to watch the space, as you say. It's a developing area and an important area. I might close on the one point. I think you made a really good observation. I always remembered ESG being positioned as this is a lens to look at companies. And the point is that companies that don't have a good environmental policies or social policies or governance policies, it's a leading indicator that there might be problems down the road that is going to impact valuation, whether it's losing clients, whether it's losing market share, whether it's lawsuits, et cetera. And I think you're cementing that point by saying exactly that. I think that we have to take a broader definition of risk. And as an investor, I think impact investing and others are taking a more broader definition of risk. But I think it's exciting to see how this what has evolved over the last 20 years and perhaps how, you know, it's going to go over the next couple of decades. So
maybe I could just add in one comment, because I know you're sitting in North America, and I think just a comment about impact and ESG. I mean, I think the other thing we need to think about when we think about impact and ESG here is that, first of all, there are certain tailwinds, right? Whether they're happening in Europe through the European Green Deal, whether it's in the U.S. through the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act, you know, there's a certain, tailwind currently out there for specifically impact investments in the area of climate. But I think another tailwind perhaps for impact in North America could be this polarization of this ESG, these words, you know, these three letters. And, you know, you've seen, I'm sure, you know, the climate stances the punitive stances taken by certain states in the U.S. against financial institutions for their climate-related policies and climate-related action plans. So, you know, like West Virginia barring J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, BlackRock from their, you know, participating in their treasury offering as a result of those climate activities. Meanwhile, you have some political views across the U.S., a little bit closer linked on the Democratic side, saying that these companies are not doing enough. So you see people, CEOs like Larry Fink coming out and saying ESG is now a bad word And I just wonder if that might be a tailwind for us to jump more into the very specific niche strategy called impact investment, where there is an explicit goal to do something positive and less room for confusion and all the definitions that are in between.
Great food for thought, Angela. We're coming to the end of our podcast, so I have a few final rapid-fire questions for you that I ask all my guests. So if you're ready, number one, professionally, what is the most important lesson you've learned over the years?
Slow and steady wins the race. You'll love it. This is the mountain analogy, Sam. This is your analogy. Your career is like a mountain. You know, you need to have your path. The path will have different pieces of terrain and different climates and different requirements for technical capabilities along that long journey. You need to take some breaks. You need to pause. But you should never, you know, lose your faith, I guess, for the goal that you've set, and just keep trucking, keep going. Don't get discouraged by temporary setbacks.
I love it. Climb high and sleep low and switch back your way to success, right?
Exactly.
Number two, what is one practical tip that you would offer listeners keen on applying your insights?
Learn as much as you can on the job. People ask me for courses all the time. And I think in your everyday, you can listen to podcasts like this one. You can do your research. You can read the newspapers. You can watch the news, inform yourselves. You can learn so much, but learn by doing.
I think that's great. I think we can always learn. The world is always changing. And no matter how much we think we know, there's always things you can learn. I learned a lot about impact investing and ESG today, for example. Number three, parting words of advice for listeners.
I guess I'm going to just leverage what you said. Don't stop learning. Be curious. Read a lot. Ask questions. Try to learn something new every day, because the only certainty we have is change. And I think learning is the best way to prepare for that.
Awesome. Angela, this has been great chatting with you all the way from Zurich. Lots of interesting cutting edge stuff. If listeners want to learn more about you or find out about your work, where do they go?
Check me out on LinkedIn. I guess I tend to really post any research that we've done. We're launching a white paper shortly on lifetime avoided emissions, scope 4. It's pretty cutting edge stuff. Very excited about that. Check me out on LinkedIn. I tend to post everything there. Otherwise, Aquila Capital, you can check us out there. You can see the work we're doing in that capacity as well.
Awesome. Angela, thank you again for joining us today on the Future Ready Advisor.
Thanks so much, Sam Sivarajan, for having me.
An interesting conversation with Angela Wiebeck of Aquila Capital. My three takeaways are: one, impact investing defined. Angela explains that impact investing involves considering not only the financial return on investments, but also measurable social and environmental impact metrics. Investors aim to achieve positive outcomes alongside financial gains. It involves a dual focus on risk return and social or environmental impact. The key here, in my view, is that there is some other social metric that is being considered alongside the standard portfolio metrics. Number two, geographic variations. Angela highlights that the motivation for impact investing can vary by geography. In some regions, investors are primarily driven by risk-return factors, while in others, they prioritize climate mitigation and broader commitments to net zero emissions, or at least for part of their portfolio. Geographic nuances play a significant role in investment decisions related to sustainability. This, in my view, is a function of local regulations as well as investor appetite. Number three, broader definition of risk. Angela emphasizes that a broader definition of risk is emerging in the investment landscape. Beyond traditional financial risks, investors are increasingly factoring in environmental, social, and governance risks, as well as reputational risks. the evolving understanding of risk is shaping investment strategies. I've always believed that risk is a multidimensional metric. Impact investing just highlights other possible dimensions to investor definitions of risk. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And if you could rate it while you're at it, I would appreciate it. Visit samsivarajan.com, where you can download a behavioral coaching guide and find other resources. Join me in the next episode for more tips and tools to make your practice future ready.